All right, hi, this is Penny Fool.
And this is Black Core.
And we are back for part two of our special on the Chicago kink scene and Chuck Renslow.
Yay!
Woohoo! We are cozy, we are sinking into our couch, and we are ready to talk about Renslow. I'm so excited. Oh man, I got this big old book here. I'm fucking hyped. Thank you for talking through this with me.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this guy, he's like a really interesting guy, and all the people surrounding him are too.
That's right. He certainly is. We wrapped up end of part one, talking about like the really early days of the leather scene back before it had coalesced. When it was starting to coalesce, Renslow was kind of this phone book of like leather contacts that people would come into town and you know, find someone to hook up with through him. You had what's his name? You had Stewart, aka Phil Sparrow. Mm-hmm. Who was, you know, about to move out of town, start beefing with Renslow, but he had introduced Renslow and Renslow's partner, Dom Orejudos, who mm-hmm. was also his business partner, to the leather scene, to the concept of leather, to, like, the material of leather, right?
Yeah.
The leather jackets, whatever else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Renslow and Dom were starting to be like, oh, all these guys coming into town on their, like, bikes and stuff, you know?
Right, and we got this gym, and we got, you know.
We got this gym, we're fucking, what's next? All right, so here we go. Here's what's next, ready?
Mm-hmm.
What's next is the iconic, the famous Gold Coast, the first official location of a leather bar, and not like unofficial bar that was kind of into leather, but the first like explicitly leather bar in mm-hmm. America, maybe in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting development, founded in 1958. And let's talk about how they got there, how they ended up like starting this thing. So as we know, there was this history where the young guys, Renslow and Orejudos, were like, okay, we're becoming this kind of hub. And with that status, they were like, hold up, let's, you know, we already have these friends, we're getting into leather, let's try to, you know, go out to bars basically and like have like a little leather space, right? Because
mm-hmm.
we like are helping these people hook up, like we're kind of social, let's have like a little bit of a scene, right? So they didn't actually own a space or anything like that, so they started just going to local bars dressed up in leather. That's
okay.
basically what they did, right? So like
kind of
if people
like a group. Like,
yep.
Okay.
So people, they had like them and then a couple of regulars who were kind of like their friends that they besties they hung out with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of their names off the top of my head right now. And then also anyone who's like coming into town
mm-hmm.
on the phone tree, they just like
okay, yeah,
will come through. So, oh, like, oh yeah, come through, right?
Right.
We'll be here tonight. So that's what they did, and they did that for almost a year. I think like 9 months,
uh-huh.
and the process of that was like hopping from place to place to place. So basically being like, okay, here's a bar. Let's just go here and see what happens.
Right.
You know? So the first one they went to was a gay bar. And basically right away, the owner told them within like a week, hey, you're scaring the hoes. Like these vanilla gay boys do not like all your leather and stuff that you're
yeah.
trying to do in here. Do not come back.
Yeah.
So they scared the hoes. They left.
Oh my God.
Then they went to another place that I remember this actually. They went to another place that was owned by some like old Italian lady, I think. And she really liked them. She was like, y'all are cool.
Aww.
Come hang out. They spent quite a while there, but then she died or left town or something like that. And so her, I think, son took over the property and was like, get out of here. I don't want y'all in here anymore.
Yeah.
That was for like, you know, maybe like 4 months or something like that. Then they went to a bar called the Gold Coast Show Lounge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they went there is because it was dead. And so they were looking for some place like where they could go chill in their leathers. You know, it was a slowly growing group as they were going out and socializing regularly.
Right.
And they were like, they heard that this bar, no one went there. So
yeah.
they were like, well, okay, it's fucking dead. Even on a Saturday night, we'll go hang out there. Right.
Yeah.
So they did that. So they hung out in this Gold Coast Show Lounge for like 5 months. And then the, I think the owner of that either retired or passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And then his son who took over was like, hey, this place isn't doing any business. Do you guys want to run the place instead? Basically.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Asked them if they wanted to run it and then eventually ended
up
buying
so
it.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know. That's just like so, it's like out of a dream, like just it's like falls out of in their lap like that.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know. I just
mm-hmm.
think it's so cool for them.
It is cool. It fell in the lap, but it also it has this a logic to it, you know, because it's
right,
like
exactly
they're trying to do these things you should do if you're trying to get them going. It's like build some interest, be doing it together, be regularly doing it yourself.
Uh-huh.
go someplace that has a good opportunity, and the opportunity strikes because you're there in the right place at the right time, you
Okay,
know?
good point.
Yeah, but I hear you too.
Yeah, perspective. I think like, yeah, I really do believe in a mixture of like luck and then awesome circumstance and
I do
like,
too. I agree.
so yeah.
It's like you put yourself in a position to be lucky. Sometimes you get lucky when you're in the right place, and sometimes you don't.
Right,
You know?
especially if you've been going there regularly and then it just you've put yourself in that, you know, position multiple times and then you got lucky.
Right. And one thing about Renslow that makes this possible too is Renslow is a businessman. You know, so some people I think wouldn't be like, I want to go in and do the financials and take out the loan to buy the place, because he's still to buy it, right?
Right.
Didn't get it as a gift, right? So he's still to buy it, but he was like, I'm a business person, that's what I do now, right? Because he had already done this photo studio, he already done a gym, right? He was developing this identity of himself as like a capitalist business guy, so he was like, I'm gonna do it, right? So I think that that was essential for that. So they took this building, they cut off the show lounge part of it, and then it just became the Gold Coast, right?
Okay, yeah.
So they're like, this is like a simpler way to do it. And then now, this is like, you know, relatively new concept. And also around this time, you know, they weren't the only ones having this thought, even though this, you know, may have been the first one that opened. It was like, you know, everyone was opening around this time, right? This is when the first ones were popping up,
Right.
first leather bars in San Francisco and New York, wherever else, right?
Right.
So it was like, this is a thing, a trend, a thing that was happening as the scene was coalescing. People were like, let's start these spaces where you can go, right? And
In
is.
major cities
In major cities, and
with the
make them our
homosexual
own and
population.
figure out what we can do
I
with
said
it.
homosexual, but gay population.
You
No, it
fine?
just made me think of that scene in Fellow Travelers, but
When
let's
they say
stay on this.
homosexuals, I forget what
Well,
they
he
said.
was like, I prefer to be called a homosexual.
Oh yeah, who said
And then
that?
he was like, we just call ourselves gay. So like the, you know, like the daddy character, like
Oh
the,
yeah.
yeah, the, oh God, I forgot his name. But Hawk, he said that
Hawk,
and they were like,
yeah.
you need to call, he's like, well, that's who I am. They were like, that's more associated with affliction and da 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 da
Oh
and like,
yeah.
and so, you know, he was just old school and they weren't.
He was old school.
But it was kind of, but that makes me think like, you know, back then they were like, they probably called themselves homosexuals, or do you think they called themselves gay?
I think if I
Off
recall
topic
correctly,
question.
no, actually this is like on topic too, and this mentioned in the some of the Stewart book.
Yeah.
I think that they called themselves gay. And at back in like the 30s and the 40s.
Right.
So I assume they're still talking calling themselves gay at this point.
Well, I think it's also important that there's a distinction where, like, Chuck, like, you know, not many people were, like, living an explicitly gay life. You know, like Hawk, that was the whole thing. He was DL. So it's like, this is, you know, this guy lived and breathed. He was a gay
That's a
man.
great point, is that
Yeah.
Chuck really didn't, even if he felt shame, he didn't exhibit a lot of that shame externally and was very out of the closet for his time.
Yeah.
He would let people know he was a gay man.
Very, like, transgressive.
Very
Yeah.
unusual for this
Yeah.
time period. Yeah. No, it was very interesting. So in you know, so he was like, he started this business, working closely with Dom. One mistake that they made, but also like a good mistake as mistakes go, was that they painted the walls. I really Dom painted the walls because he was an artist. So Dom had, scooting back in time a little bit, Dom had been building his reputation as an artist in the nascent leather scene. So he's a very artistic person. He was a major movie buff, art twink. He was a famous ballet dancer for like the Chicago Ballet and stuff, and also choreographer. And he also loved drawing like basically pornographic images, similar to Tom of Finland. He and Tom of Finland were like the two most famous pornographic image drawers at this time, if you've heard of Tom of Finland. And so he had been drawing all these images, and they were selling them out of the photo studio as well. So they would like make a magazine, and the magazine would be actual real pictures of like, you know, guys who were working out at their gym. And then also it would be pornographic images that he had drawn,
Right.
that Dom had drawn under the pen name Etienne, which is, as we noted, is last episode, is also Stephen in French, and he also did some under Stephen as well. And so Dom was had this like artistic style of these big muscular dudes with fat cocks, like very masculine men, right? Kind of.
You know, like really like ripped clothes that are like very tight clothes with really ripped bodies with like the hats, a lot of leather and like latex imagery, a lot of
Exactly.
uniform, a lot of like uniform fetish too.
Uniforms, yep.
Yeah.
He also had a major foot fetish. There's a lot of like foot stuff happening in them. And he painted, the mistake that they made was that he painted these murals on the walls of this building after they had got ownership of it. And that was a mistake because eventually they had to move, right? So if you're running a gay business, always assume that you'll have to move at some point. Any business, but especially gay business.
Yeah.
So you never know what's gonna happen, good or bad. So, but they drew it on the walls, and so that created this atmosphere that was very transgressive and exciting for the time, as many things that they did. Where when you walk into this leather bar, you have someone at the, at the door checking your ID and like making sure you can enter at this time period, ensuring that you're, kind of a good fit, right? Which is like maybe that you're wearing leather, although leather was still becoming a material, of the scene, which as wasn't as much. In some ways, they were more strict, but some ways less strict too, because like they didn't have this like years and years and decades of like it being called leather that we have now, right? It was still developing.
Yeah.
So, but just making sure you weren't someone who wasn't into the lifestyle walking off the street, right? You like, if you didn't have leather, you had to wear jeans and you had to wear boots and stuff like that,
Yeah, there was
right?
like a what do you call that? Like a conduct or a code of
Code
conduct.
of conduct. So
Yeah.
you walk in to see this, and then once you get it in through it, you see these big murals, these beautiful murals all over the wall of all this like sexual, gay stuff. Still very new for the time for that to be like a thing, like a space like that. And then they had this like they regularly had these island bars in the Gold Coast. So like in the middle of the bar, or the middle of the bar space is like the actual bar where you get drinks in like an island,
Yeah.
kind of in the center. And then they tried to always have a play space that would like often downstairs in the basement. So they had that too, and that's like a little bit
Nice.
more. We can go fuck upstairs a little bit more, just drinks, which is like something you see a lot as a model in leather spaces today too.
Yeah, and just like a friendly space, but also can be like a cruising space. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So they did that, and it could be hearsay or like reminiscing fond memories, but a lot of people say that this space, and then also I think the second space they had for the Gold Coast had a lot of magic to them. The people said they were very, just felt very like special, and like I think it kind of makes sense. Like it would feel so unique at the time to go to a space like this because there weren't any other spaces like that. It'd be like out of this world, right? So
Yeah,
you'd be there,
for
and
sure.
everyone who was there was probably really committed to like, whoa, I'm here for this thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I can imagine the social energy was probably pretty exciting.
I had a question. So I know that leather history, some of it ties back to these guys who were in the war, then starting kind of like biker gangs or kind of starting, kind of like groups or like, I don't know if they were all biker gangs, but some of them were, and then some of them, and then there's kind of that tie to having some, elements of SM, and like some of them, had like families and groups and dynamics and things like that. So I'm curious, like, I know they're not military men, and that was more like Sam and all of them, but these people who are at the leather bar, is that demographic still there? Or like, I guess I'm wondering if like, they're just kind of coming into the leather space, but leather had that whole history before. So who's coming to these?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
This is very much in the like still the American scene, which is really the first kink scene again, is coalescing. At least the way that we think about kink today, is still coalescing. So when you think about those groups of vets who are bikers, right? Most of those groups are forming after World War II, right? Of people who are like, oh, we're going to be kind of kinky and gay and whatever else, and that's a lot of like where the practice of leather comes from in terms of like kind of like what we have passed on today in like social groups. But those people are coming through town, and they'll go to this bar. Like they'll be like, oh, this is a key stopping point when we're on the road, right? Is to go to this bar. So this is one of the bars that caters to these bike groups. And then also the people who are at this bar also start their own bike club, right?
Yeah.
So it's like there's a I think Gold Coast bike club
Okay.
that like basically runs low or who knows, everyone is in, right? And so like they have this physical location, and they're not primarily bikers because they're also like people in Chicago, but
Yeah.
they're heavily influenced by bikers, and they are themselves bikers as well, and they do the same kinds of things, right? They'll do just like other biker groups do of leather men. They'll do like runs, right, where they'll be like, we're gonna go away for the weekend and be butt fucking on some farm, right,
That's great.
somewhere in Wisconsin, right? And so
Yeah.
it's just like very they don't come from the vet background, but some people that they're hanging out with are vets, right? And
Yeah.
it's like very much still like contemporaneous, if that makes
Okay.
sense.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So Gold Coast has been opened, and that's kind of where you were, right?
Gold Coast has been opened 1958. Leather biker groups are starting slightly before that, like in the early 50s, but like still it's the same, you know, within the same like 5 years basically. So that's all happening. It's all very exciting. And let's talk a little bit about some of the mob ties, because you mentioned
Okay.
that earlier.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things about Renslow is that he is a capitalist, but he's also a part of the Chicago political machine and also has strong ties to the mob. And the rest of that kind of like is simple to conceptualize, but the mob thing is pretty interesting and complex. So like part of this is that anyone who did business in Chicago at this time was associated with the mob. Like you just had to do business in Chicago, especially if you were a nightlife mob, like really
Yeah.
owned nightlife. So actually the reason that they end up leaving the first location of the Gold Coast, is because a mob guy bought the building and then saw that they had really increased the business in the Gold Coast from where it was before, because all these gay men were coming in, and then just jacked up the price of the rent. And then for them, they were like, oh, fuck this. So then they secretly, at nighttime, snuck out of the building or whatever, like all their stuff, like over a couple of nights. So he didn't know that they were moving and moved into a new space. And then he was mad at them. And then one of his cronies came in and was like, hey, you better pay your protection money because you scampered out of my friend there when he tried to raise a rent on you. And then so it was basically this back and forth of Renzo negotiating with the mob, becoming tight with the mob, paying off police officers who were also in with the mob.
Wow.
And it didn't stop there. It's like, to me, it's still not clear at all. You know, people would say officially that he wasn't part of it, but it's not clear at all to me that Renzo wasn't part of the mob.
Right.
One example that's really interesting, this, and we'll talk more about this later, but that Renslow ended up buying this really famous mansion, so opulent, called the Dues Mansion in Chicago. And he was living there with his gay boys and throwing huge bashes. Absolutely crazy. And he was told by the mob that he had to leave the building. And he just did. You know, he didn't really fight back. He was like, okay. You know, my superior mob bosses are telling me I gotta leave the building, I'm gonna leave the building. To me, that's just something that someone does if they're part of the mob, you know? Like, sure, the mob says I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna leave my fancy mansion. He basically gave it away for free, you know? It's like, it was very expensive to buy. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that
It's
definitely
suspicious.
tracks.
Suspicious, yeah.
Yeah, no, and it just makes sense for the time period and
Yep.
like you know, I mean, I remember you saying that like that Renslow was kind of a like a rough and tumble guy. Like he beat people up and like
Yep.
him and his friends. So
Yep.
like, you know, him being a part of the mob is not the most far-fetched thing I would ever. I mean, you know, he had that gregarious element that made him, you know, affable enough to like connect with a lot of different types of people, a lot of different types of gay people.
Yep.
But I do think that like what you said, he probably was like that. It seemed like he was kind of like rough. And like then he Dom was kind of like soft or whatever,
Or at least his bottom, yeah. Yeah. 100%. And
And when I
Renzel
say
also.
soft, I mean, I guess soft, I mean like an energy.
Oh, got you. I don't know what Dom's personality was. I just know he was flirty and slutty. But he could have been soft. He might have been offended if we said that to him because he was a leather man. But he also might have been like, yes, I am. I really don't know. Yeah. I need to read a book about him next. What was I gonna
A
say?
good point, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so it's hard to say like whether those mob affiliations were there or not for Renslow, but it's definitely possible. You know, at least for sure he was doing business with them because he had to. So we had the Gold Coast. We can talk a little bit more about like what the Gold Coasts were like. But any other kind of questions or thoughts on that bar or the mob stuff so far?
No.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what the Gold Coast was like and its other locations, and then we'll talk about a couple of the other businesses that
Yeah.
Renzel ran. So the Gold Coast, probably the most famous location of it was a little bit. They were in downtown when they started. They moved north of Chicago. Is this area called the Loop? That's like the kind of like main downtown area that
Oh,
like,
yeah, I've heard of,
yeah. Okay. So they moved north of that. And that location is probably the most famous one, and they were there for like the longest period of time.
Okay.
It had like a really, really extensive basement complex because Chicago had done this weird thing where they moved the sidewalks up a floor, so there was like basically all this like random basement area you could walk around in. So that one had a huge play space that was very cavernous, and people had a lot of fun there apparently, and also notably hosted a lot of like packed movie nights that Dom organized. That was kind of like what they did. They also had leather shops, set up inside of it, and really just establishing a lot of the things we think of now as like our standard for leather bars, like doing all those things, or establishing them in concert with the other leather bars that were popping up in other parts of the country. So it kind of makes sense. But yeah, that was the Gold Coast. Very, very exciting times. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of Renzo's other ventures as well, since those are also pretty crazy. Okay, so, or sorry, anything else before we hop over to that?
No.
Okay, so also there was were bathhouses. Renzo ran several. Bathhouses at this time were different from how we think about them today. So you might think of like, a regular gay bathhouse or like a Korean spa or something like that. The difference is that these were also like theater venues. Kind of, so for instance, like Bette Midler, if you know her, got her start singing and performing in bathhouses. Like almost every bathhouse had like a concert venue, as far as I know, where you
Wow,
could
interesting.
perform. And they were also like, at least in Renzo's case, they were like hotels too. So Renzo started this famous bathhouse called Man's Country, that did all
Nice
the
name.
regular bathhouse and fucking or whatever stuff, but also it was like a hotel, also had this performance art space, and then also had a leather space, which not all bathhouses had at this time. So that was very popular. They did a really nice membership model too, where like people who showed up for like their like opening night got free memberships, and then everyone else had to pay in the future, which created a lot of like gay FOMO, which is always great if you're trying to
That's
make your
always
business successful, make the
just like
gays
people
have fear of
always
missing
gonna be
out.
talking about it.
Renzo was good at businesses. So they opened out of that up that there's a lot of stories about that only closed pretty recently in the 2000s, Man's Country. And opened up like a just so many other businesses. One thing about that's amazing about Renslow is that he was willing to take risks, willing to just try it and open things up, which I find very inspiring, and it's very hard to do, especially as an indecisive gay person, where he'd be like, sure, I'm gonna open up an occult bookstore. Sure, I'm gonna open up a restaurant. Sure, I'm gonna open up, all the other businesses we were talking about. Like he there's a list of businesses in this book that he opened, and it's like I think like 20 different businesses that he opened up in Chicago.
And I know you also mentioned that like he had several submissives or bottoms under him, and they kind of aided because at that time, I mean, he had Dom, but they were polyamorous and or
Yeah,
at least not monogamous.
exactly. So the infrastructure that was running all these businesses wasn't just him. Yeah, there was this like notorious concept, notorious thing is the right word, of the family, where the family is in caps again, just giving very mob affiliated in some ways.
No, it really does, yeah,
Yeah,
have
yes.
that energy.
Yeah. So Renzo had this was notorious for preying on kind of like down on their luck young guys. Starting with Dom, who I guess like wasn't really down on his luck when he met him, but a young guy. And then from there, bringing more people into the fold. Some of them left the fold, whatever else. But he was less of a hookup guy apparently, and more of a, I'm gonna bring you into my family, and you're going to live with me, and then you're going to like do work on my businesses and be kind of like shown off as a prop. And there was this dynamic that of course gay people love to talk about, where the family, again in caps, right, would come through one of his businesses and be like, we're all showing up at the same time, and Daddy Renslow, Daddy Chuck, is going to the back office to do his business.
Yeah.
And then all of the boys, right, are going to go cruise around and see who's there, but, like, walking around in a group, right? You know, you can, I'm doing, like, little hand motions, like, walking around together, making rounds. Be like, oh, we're here, we're, you know, we're daddy's boys, like, who are in charge of everything, right? So, and so they manage many of his businesses. You know, they did a lot of maintenance work. They were basically like free labor, except he was paying for all their life expenses and also giving them money for stuff that they wanted.
Well, they were probably Leathermen, so they probably wouldn't be called daddy's. Well, I guess they're probably being daddy's boys still.
Oh yeah, they were. There was a clear daddy boy dynamic. He was always, Renzo always was talking about it. He was a daddy, and then these were his boys.
Yeah. Good for him.
He definitely embodied the leather daddy persona. That was his thing, and he said, later in life, he would be like, yeah, I feel like part of the reason I do all this work is that I want to be, like, a daddy to the community.
Aw, yeah.
Which is hilarious.
He's, like, number one dad.
Yeah. Exactly. So, this, as you can imagine, created endless talk and speculation, envy, like, concern, right? There was, like, just, they were notorious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact also that while all this was happening, Renzo was making a good deal of money kind of in the, like, roaring 70s, right, running all these businesses,
mm-hmm.
pre-AIDS. They moved into this fancy mansion that we had mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
and started throwing these huge opulent parties. They mm-hmm. threw probably the most famous circuit party before circuit parties were really a thing, which was called the White Party.
Okay.
And the, I know, right? And the White Party was just everyone wears white,
yeah.
and just an excuse for people to wear opulent, cunty 70s, like, white outfits that coming from all over the country. Yeah, exactly. So, like, the outfits were, you know, super legendary, crazy stuff or whatever. And there's all kinds of pictures you can look up of the stuff that people, like, wore to the white parties. But it was, you know, invite only, very mm-hmm. exclusive. You got to go to this multi-million-dollar mansion and hang out.
Yeah.
So, you know, just really, really, like, wild lifestyle type stuff. Huge power dynamic, huge whatever else. So, you know, very, very interesting kind of situation with this.
With the young man and Chuck, or
exactly.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's one thing we should just make note of, like, all this is great and glamorous, but there were speculations that some of these young men were kind of exploited.
Yeah.
So just wanted to say that, you know, because that's sensitive, kind of make note of that. And
Right. Absolutely. That's controversial, right? But I think it's like, I think especially if you're looking at it from the outside, that's what it seems like. And then if you're on the inside, it's like probably split opinions of people, like whether that was actually the case or not.
Right.
But it's like, you know, if you're looking at something outside and it smells kind of weird, there are probably some weird parts to it, you know?
So,
definitely an interesting kind of situation. And it, you know, kind of up and up, he kept running all these different things, and then AIDS happened, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, AIDS was tough. Like, a number of Renslow's partners died. Renzo did not die. So, you know, Don passed away in 91,
mm-hmm.
Cliff Raven passed away, I forgot when, maybe early 2000s, maybe earlier. Mm-hmm. One of his boys, he had actually legally adopted, he also passed away. I think another of his boys passed away too. So it was really like a lot of people were dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the Renslow family was in financial difficulties because they were running all these businesses, you know, they're running bathhouses and clubs and stuff, and people weren't going out because they were terrified, right? People were dying left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So that they've, you know, after a period of making a huge amount of money off the gay community,
mm-hmm.
the Renslow was businesses were really struggling. Mm-hmm. They were losing money, a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there was also controversy because, you know, like, Renslow was running these businesses that, like, some saw as, like, oh, great, these are still open. But some saw as, like, these are exploiting the community, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, you're running a bathhouse during AIDS.
Right.
He was also running one of the leading gay newspapers, right? And mm-hmm. so, like, you're running that and, like, well, how are you covering AIDS, right? Like, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that was, like, a super hard time, you know. did a bunch of activism stuff, but there was a lot of controversy that happened then too. This guy is nothing if not controversial.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that all took place. And you know, the family mutated into different forms. Like during this time, Dom moved and was living with someone else. There were a number of like children who ended up living with the family, like actual children, because Chuck was dating these people who were like bisexual or had like, you know, past like relationships before he met them, where they had children. So a lot of time passes here. But then kind of coming out of this period of like this dark period of AIDS, which makes a huge impact on the community, there are two really big things that you know, Renslow founds that kind of like continue to this day to be super important. So one of those things is founded before AIDS, continues through AIDS, which is International Mr. Leather. That started out as actually just Mr. Gold Coast, right? So like when they had the Gold Coast, they used to have a competition, and then it got way too popular and too crowded, so they were like, let's just aim big and make this the International Leather Competition. And that's still extremely popular. I was just listening to On Guard Cigar Salon, which is this good podcast and YouTube channel with these like older leather men talking about stuff, and you know, they still talk a lot about International Mr. Leather. It's still a very big thing in the gay scene. Yeah, it's huge, very popular, very, very complicated contest. And you know, that you can watch videos of the like early International Mr. Leather on YouTube if you want to check it out. There's on the Leather Archives YouTube channel. It's very, very fun to watch. Dom was the head judge of that till he died. Apparently did a great job judging. And lots of other like kind of famous like dignitaries from the gay community would come in and judge. So that was really cool.
So, what kind of what are like some of the requirements for somebody, or like what are the kind of the competitions and what do the contests look like?
Yeah, good question. This is standard format. So usually it's like it's kind of like being on Drag Race, but for leather. So it's like basically like a lot of it is just how you dress, like how cunty leather you dress. And of course they're not
And your
evaluating just like
body.
how you know, cunty and how much body you're giving or whatever, but also like kind of how tough and macho do you look or whatever else. Because a lot of times the winners tend to be leather daddies, not always. So they'll like do outfits, like whether it's they'll do like a like full leather outfit, they'll do like kind of like a swimsuit or whatever, or like jock strap, just to value your body, you know, kind of like being in a beauty pageant, right? And then they also do like you give a speech where you talk about your involvement in the leather community and what you'll do if you win. And you also think about people's experience, like are they actually just someone who's like showing up in a poser, or do they actually regularly play and have been in the scene for decades, right? That makes a big impact. So that's like what you do basically. And to get to the international competition, you have to usually win like a local contest. You like win like the local like Dayton, Ohio contest, and then that gets you to the international contest, whatever else. So that's how that works. That makes sense. And then so there's that, and then also of huge import is Chuck found in the Leather Archives, right? So like Leather Archives, I'm planning to make a trip to visit it. I'm really excited.
That's awesome.
But you know, it just like was an initiative to make sure that we keep track of all the stuff that was created, and continues to be created in like the leather community, and just has like preserved so far like so many like really important relics and artwork, and I think like will continue to do so, and I'm so glad that that exists. So a lot of their stuff is not digitized. It seems pretty clunky from a technology perspective from the outside, but also they face hard challenges, right? Like where it's like how do you digitize like old film and stuff? Like that's very difficult to do. So I sympathize, especially because they don't have that much money to do stuff with. So you know, I should donate to them. I haven't donated yet. But yeah, founded that with the guy who helped create the leather pride flag, which is cool. Tony DeBlas. So yeah, I mean, Renslow really did it all. Worked with a bunch of other people to get it done, but really just amazing life and legacy. Passed away in 2011. So yeah, it was cool to read about this and like see all the stuff. And you know, we did a quick skim through a lot of these things, but there's like all many of them went on for in years, decades, right? And had like so many rich histories and images and art and stuff associated with it. And if you, especially if you go look at the leather archives or just Google some of these things, you'll see like really cool pictures and images of all this different stuff. So really amazing, amazing stuff that we could, you know, each thing could be its own little podcast episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man. All right. That was awesome. Okay, I think that's probably everything I wanted to talk about. Any final thoughts on Mr. Renslow?
No, I think you honestly got it all. Super interesting guy. And so was Sam
Sam Stewart.
Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. This the sex addict super fag. Good for him. Yeah. Okay, great. Yep. Nice talking. See you guys later.
So, yeah.